How you doing there? Just a quickie before we start. On the Apple podcast, why don't you double click on David McWilliams Plus? It's right there when you open the podcast. You get ad-free, you unlock early access. Just double click and away you go. David McWilliams Plus. You get this pure and...
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Simple.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
Hi there. Welcome to the podcast. Mac is off on a well-earned break after a brilliant Kilconomics weekend last weekend. Actually, he never takes a break and he's off in America doing other stuff, which I'm sure we'll hear all about next week on the podcast. Anyway, as I said, Kilconomics was fantastic and it was full of a who's who of economists and big thinkers from around the world, many of who have been guests on the podcast. So, as a special treat, we want to bring you one of the many great sessions from the festival. Mac sat down with the fantastic Yanis Varoufakis to discuss a whole range of topics. But as they chatted for well over an hour, here's a slightly edited version of their chat, where they cover all sorts of things, including Yanis' theory of tech feudalism, the EU, the ECB, and the UK. All sorts of stuff. It's really, really good. I love this, and I hope you do too. Enjoy.
Yanis, how are you? I want to talk to you about your new book, which is out in April, I think it is. It's going to be and I think it's a fascinating title and it's a fascinating idea called Techno-Feudalism. Now, explain that to us. What is the book about? What has inspired you? What's the history of it? What is techno-feudalism?
Look, in 2008, which was a year that marked you just as much as it marked me and the whole world, Ireland, Greece, the whole thing. Since 2008, I've been feeling that the world was transformed in the same way that after 1929, nothing resembled the world before 1929. I felt something was happening around there. And over the years, this idea has crept up on me that in the same way that in 1991, the left was defeated spectacularly, and we never recovered. I'm speaking as a leftist. Communism, socialism, social democracy, gone, kaput. We have not managed to recover. We had moments. Yeah. But the defeat has been endless.
And you just so you think that the end of the Soviet Union was the end of that ism?
It was the end of that ism. It was not the end of the left, but it was the end of the ideas that the left had up until then, all of them, from central planning, Gosplanned style, Soviet planning, to social democracy. Social democracy never recovered, even though social democracy had turned against the Soviet Union and against the communists.
Yeah.
Social democracy was in terminal and remains in terminal decline. But maybe that's my way of dealing with my permanent defeat. I started thinking that 2008 was a year when capitalism got its comeuppance. And so, to answer your question in brief, for me, techno-feudalism is what capitalism has morphed into.
Okay.
Now, that is a very big claim to say that this is not capitalism anymore, because wherever we look at, We see capital triumphing. So this is my contradictory hypothesis, that because of a magnificent triumph of capital, and a new form of capital, which I call cloud capital, I'll explain this in a minute, capitalism is dead at the hands of capital. And what we now have is something that resembles feudalism a lot more than it resembles capitalism. And because it's algorithmic, digital, cloud-based, I call it techno-feudalism. Just to complete that story.
Keep going.
Capitalism has had many, many different variants because, you know, my critics, I've presented this techno-feudalism thesis. I'm writing it up as a book now, but I've presented it a number of times to different audiences. So, by the way, the ones who actually loathe my thesis come from the left.
Always.
But you know why? I understand it. It's completely psychological. Because they think, you know, we leftists feel that we came to this earth in order to replace capitalism.
From Mars.
To overthrow capitalism and to replace it. But if this is what we are experiencing now is not capitalism, why is it not socialism? What are you saying? That capitalism will overthrow itself without our help? Yes, that's what I'm saying. The left doesn't like that. That, you know, the realization that we are useless. Capital overthrew capitalism, not labor. Anyway, close the bracket there. Now, if you look at post-war capitalism, the Bretton Woods era, that capitalism had nothing to do with the capitalism of the 1920s. The 1920s capitalism, monopoly capitalism, you know, Henry Ford and, you know, Thomas Edison and all, had nothing to do with 19th century competitive capitalism. So capitalism has changed many times. But so why am I saying that this is not capitalism? Why can't we call it rentier capitalism or, you know, hyper-capitalism or super-capitalism or something? Because all capitalisms up until now had two planks, two pylons. One was profit. It was the fuel of capitalism, all sorts of capitalism. You know, the Gilded Age, Bretton Woods, financialization.
It's the one number
profit
that...
is, you know, capital accumulation, as we Marxists say, but profit is what makes the world go round. And the second plank, the second pylon, is the market. Before capitalism, most of economic activity here in Ireland, in Greece, in the United Kingdom, everywhere, was not channeled through markets. So peasants worked. The sheriff came and collected part of the harvest on behalf of the landlord. That wasn't the market. That was just pure extraction, right?
Yeah.
The peasant was not working for a wage. There was no... The peasant could not quit. Land was not usually for sale. Either you conquered it or were given it or you inherited it. If you never had it, you never got it. You were a peasant. So most economic activity was outside of markets. With capitalism, everything goes through the market. The labor market, the real estate market, the capital market, the share market, you know, the derivatives market, the futures market, everything is, that's where all economic activity, exploitation, call it what you might, goes through. Today, especially after the bailouts, the money printing by central banks, private equity that is funded to a very large extent by central bank money, for me, what has been driving the system, and we can see there is a spasm now that we have inflation, has been central bank money, not profits. Profits are important, but profits were always important, even under feudalism.
Yeah.
Now the main driving force is not profit, it is central bank money. And this is where they are now, why they are, you know, up in arms and they don't know what to do. Because inflation pushes them towards stopping the money printing. But if they stop the money printing, the whole thing collapses because it is driven by central bank money. And the second thing, and that's where I end, is, you know, markets are being replaced. When you visit Amazon.com or any site, you exit the market. Amazon.com is not a market. It's a fiefdom, a fief. It's owned by one man, right? Yes, there are thousands of sellers and thousands of buyers, but it's not a marketplace. The marketplace, even under feudalism, was a place that was decentralized, where people met, they sold, they bought, they tracked, they bartered, they exchanged. Yeah? Now, everything is done through an algorithm. Now, if you and me and you, now, as if we had three laptops and we went into Amazon.com, right, and we typed something, we wouldn't get the same recommendations. We each one would get would be matched by some other seller in the interest of Jeff Bezos, right? Of one man who owns the algo. Now, that is nearer to feudalism, to a feudal lord that owns not the market, but a new platform which bypasses the market and does something quite remarkable. And does anybody have Alexa in your home? I'm not recommending that you do. I'm asking.
You know, the bizarre thing is...
You do.
We got it.
Yeah, and, we got it too.
And the most terrifying thing was the fact that it took videos of what our kids were actually doing when we were out, and we turned it off. The last thing as a parent, you don't want to know what your kids are doing. It's their world. But you know, seriously, that's their life. They're going to make their mistakes, yada, yada, yada. And it was a bit horrifying. So it was, no, but go on, explain to me. So Alexa, that thing is still in our kitchen. It's turned off, but what does it do? This is what you tell me.
Well, I'll tell you. But before that, I need to share a personal story as well
from
Alexa. I got Alexa because I was... researching. This is my excuse. I was researching my book on techno-feudalism.
And I also
got a Google Assistant to compare and contrast, to do a comparative test, right? So I have the Google Assistant on my desk, and I had the Alexa on a coffee table nearby, not far, in our living room. And as I was, I just had a little break, and I asked Google Assistant, I just wanted to try it out to see how competitive the two of them are. So I said to... Google, what do you think of Alexa? And when you know what it said? It said, oh, I like her, especially her blue lights. Alexa has a blue light. We assistants must show solidarity to one another. And I thought, fuck. Wait, that's not the end of it. Alexa heard that and said, thank you. No, seriously, I'm not making it up. I'm not making it up. All right, close the bracket. Now, what is Alexa doing? Well, it's supposed to be your servant. You say, you know, order milk, switch on the lights, you know, start my car if you've got a Tesla. Yeah? I don't. I have a motorcycle.
We know.
Hardly starts when I push the button. And so it serves you, right? It gives you recommendations. Some of them are very good. I mean, it is eerie how well it reads me.
It knows you.
It knows me. It's scary. But in the end, in reality, what it is just a node of a cloud-based system, which is the most dialectical on infinite regresses. Anybody who studied philosophy will remember the infinite regress in Hegel.
No. Explain that to...
I will explain this, it by giving the example of Alexa and
Hegel.
And the Amazon.
I love it. Alexa
cloud.
And Hegel. Where would you get it?
What it does is this. Alexa trains you to train it to know what you want so that then, by giving you good recommendations, it can train you to buy the things that Jeff Bezos is selling you. This, I train you to train me here. This is the infinite regress. And if you add to that the fact that Amazon not only trains you to train it, to train you, to train it, to tell you what you want to buy, but actually sells it to you as well, bypassing the marketplace, it creates three types of exploited people. You are the customer whose consumer sovereignty has been shot to pieces because suddenly, you know, you think that you want something, but this want has been implanted in you. Advertising has always done that, except that this time there is no human being. There is no Don Draper for anyone who has watched. Don Draper is an algo now that belongs to Jeff Bezos. And it is totally interacting with you. Part of your soul is in that digital Don Draper. Simultaneously, okay, so you are the one exploited party. The capitalist who produced the gadget that you buy is also now a vassal capitalist, because he doesn't have, or she, the capitalist, does not have direct access to you through a marketplace. In order to get to you, the capitalist has to gain access through Jeff Bezos' algorithm that holds 30% of a levy, like feudal lords used to allow somebody to come to the estate, to the fief. That's feudalism, folks, right? There's no capitalism here. There's no market here. And finally, every time we search Amazon or Google or Facebook or whatever, we leave our footprint in terms of our likes and dislikes that adds to the algo's capital stock.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we post a review for a book or for music or for a product, we just put a few stars. We add to the capital stock. That's has never happened before under capitalism. The only way capitalists could have their capital grow was by paying a wage to a proletarian who would produce surplus value, out of which part of that would be capital his, accumulation.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, we all produce, I call us cloud serfs, because we are serfs. We don't even know that. You know, you just walk around Kilkenny and you, with your Google Maps switched on, Google's capital stock increases because Google can sell to others the fact that they know where the congestion is. So we have the cloud serfs, we have the vassal capitalists, and we have cloud proles or cloud proletarians.
Cloud proletariat.
Well, in the warehouses of Amazon.com, right, where people actually work in the traditional proletarian sense, you see people, a digitized version of Charlie Chaplin in modern times.
Mm-hmm.
So each one of them has a little gadget on them. It tells them where to go. It knows how fast they've gone to, you know, pick and pack,
yeah,
and deliver boxes. Okay, so they are driven by an algo, the same algo that makes you train it to train you to buy the stuff. Now, this is my idea of techno-feudalism.
Wow. Now, is there... So, what dystopia does that produce? How many?
Well, it's a dystopia whether you're a left winger or a right winger. Because you see, once upon a time, when we were growing up, when we were young men, mm-hmm, once, I remember the big clash was between the individualists,
yeah,
the liberals, libertarians, free marketeers, the people who were in favor of capitalism, because capitalism was a system for them, from their perspective,
people like me,
that enhanced individual agency, consumer sovereignty. The marketplace was a machine that combined our talents through competition and squeezed prices, maximized quantities, and allowed each one of us to live our dream. This wasn't my ideology,
no,
as a left-winger, as a Marxist.
But
that's gone now. Because the whole point was that the market was a machine that served your autonomous interests, interests that were your own. You were the liberal individual to the extent that you were the owner and the author of your preferences, of your desires, of your aspirations. Now, if you've got Alexa in there, which is telling you or training you to train it, to train you to train it, to train you to want what Bezos wants to sell you, and if even as a producer, you have to go through this feudal lord, essentially, then even the right-wing, conservative, pro-capitalist arguments in favor of the market have gone.
And
and think of young people, right?
Yeah,
before politics, I was a professor, and I had a lot of interaction with young people in universities in Britain, in Australia, in Greece, in the United States, and so on. And what I have observed over the last 20 years is the loss of autonomy, of an autonomous developmental process within young people. It used to be the case, was it not, that we thought, okay, we have an 8-hour mm-hmm working day,
mm-hmm,
during which we sell our labor to an employer, and then the rest of the time is our own. And there was always this distinction between leisure and work.
Sure.
We were not our job. Our yeah job was there. If we were lucky, we did a job that we liked. But nevertheless, there was a distinction, a very clear demarcation.
There was the
between,
weekend is the great idea.
Yeah,
there was the weekend.
Leisure.
That you go out and, you close
8 hours of work, 8 hours of rest, 8 hours of
education
and development, we used to say, right? But now, what I observe with social media is youngsters, for instance, are constantly anxious to create a persona that will allow them to sell themselves to an employer. And that's 24/7. It's not...
Or to sell themselves to each other.
Yeah, to each other, but also to... Because now, let's face it, when you go to an interview, when you're invited to an interview now, the interviewee has already checked your Instagram, your TikTok, your Facebook, your Twitter. They know everything about you. They have algos that compile a summary of who you are on the basis of your social media. And then something that started in a very well-meaning way. I remember, Google, for instance. They were quite good about this. I think they meant well. They were saying to prospective employees and fresh employees, you know, we want you to not forget what your dreams are, to find your authentic self, not to model yourself to what you think mm-hmm. we want you to be like. We want you to be authentic. Now, after a while, that becomes a tyrannical quest for authenticity. In order to sell yourself to Google, you have to try to be authentic. It's like telling you, be spontaneous. It is stupid. If I tell you to be spontaneous, I'm telling you that I am stupid, or that I think you are stupid, or we lose spontaneity. So be authentic.
Yeah.
And you know, you have young men and women, I saw them in universities, yeah. all over the place, wondering, how can I be authentic? How can I discover my true self? They start reading self-help books, and they're going, you know, to seminars, and they constantly look for authenticity. And that is a sure way of not getting it. It's like spontaneity. If you try to be spontaneous, you'll never be spontaneous. So in the end, you've got complete slavery. I'm a very strange Marxist because I'm a Marxist.
You are a very strange
Because Marxist. I'm a liberal. Because I think that under capitalism, the individual is not really free.
So let's keep the idea of techno-feudalism, of the impact of technology, and the very basic things that it threatens, like the state, like the commons, like the sense of national identity or coherence. Or let's progress this idea to where it goes. You know, we're involved in, we have a war in Ukraine, right? We have the United States and China on a collision course. We have big stuff going on yep. outside. What does your techno-feudalism do to the world we know?
It makes it far less safe and uncertain, and therefore more war-prone. General Motors, General Electric, Boeing, yeah, big ones, Volkswagen,
yeah.
about 80% of their revenues goes to wages.
Yeah.
Amazon, 2%.
It's 2%. Wow.
Facebook, 1%. Which means that the money is not being spread around. Which means that, yes, you've got very wealthy financiers and corporates and so on.
Sure.
Together with austerity, permanent austerity for the many, you end up with very low spending power on behalf of the multitudes.
Of the citizen, yeah.
Which means you end up with very little investment in the things society needs, like green energy. Why do you think that Europe is completely in the pockets of Gazprom, has been? You know, we've been totally dependent on Putin because Germany, Greece, Ireland, we have not been investing in energy over the last 30 years. And we relied on the cheapest, most destructive to the planet energy form. Now, as the wealth is concentrated due to techno-feudalism,
Exponentially,
the capacity of this system, this is not a moral criticism or even a political criticism, it's just a factual macroeconomic point, which you understand very well, that aggregate demand is shrinking, and therefore investment is shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, it's either the central bank printing money to create, you know, the money that works like cortisone to a cancer patient, you know, props him up or her up, but doesn't cure anything. And then you've got inflationary bouts like we have now, and then they freak out and don't know what to do about it. And whenever you've got a system like capitalism or techno-feudalism, call it what you might, creating all these crises, two things happen. The first thing is politics. Democracies get poisoned, and you have the Trumps, the Le Pens, the Farages, the Melonis, yep. the Orbans. You know, the list is growing you know, every day. On the one hand, you have that. And on the other hand, you have a wonderful terrain on which different kinds of cold and hot wars can develop because they create demand.
For real
they
stuff.
They create demand for real stuff, like, you know, rockets and tanks and cannons. That's how the world got out of the Depression, the Great Depression, in the mid-war period. And if you look at it now, I mean, the United States economy is getting a major boost from the war in Ukraine. Putin is getting richer every day. He has the greatest surplus, counter-account surplus, in the history of post-Soviet Russia because imports have collapsed due to
sanctions. Yeah.
His sales of energy have shrunk, but the prices shot up so much that the total revenues that he gets, he and his regime get, is bigger, $250 billion.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Let's talk about Europe.
Yeah,
you know, you and I witnessed the launch of DiEM, the political party in Berlin, some years back. You've always felt that Europe needs a pan-left movement. Mm-hmm. You've always felt that the interests of European workers in general mm-hmm. are much more unifying than national divisions. In terms of, do you still maintain that? Because it was a very exciting time in Berlin. It's extremely
hard
exciting.
To do, but it has to be done. The only alternative to having transnational progressive politics is what we have now. And what we have now is a guaranteed process of disintegration. The European Union is disintegrating. I mean, there will not be another Brexit, because we saw what happened with that. But there doesn't need to be another Brexit for the European Union gradually to disintegrate in practice, if not in form. Already you have Orbán in Hungary, the Polish government, using what they like, the bits they like about the European Union, the single market, selling, getting some money from the common agricultural policy and so on. Huh? But they are disregarding everything else about the European Union. Olaf Scholz, the other day, after having vetoed a pan-European energy union, launched a 200 billion euro program for essentially tilting the playing field in favor of German companies in the field of energy. So he violated the principle of the single market. The single market is gone, finished. Everybody does whatever they want now. You know, there's state aid here, state aid there. The European Central Bank is looking after the interests of the banks that are making super normal profits now due to interest rate hikes. Spain tries to introduce a windfall tax on banks. Does so by stealth. Greece doesn't. Germany doesn't.
But I mean, in terms of what is now the alternative to what may be a flawed but pretty globally and internally benign arrangement, and it's an arrangement.
Well, because there is no alternative to saving this European Union from itself. This is why I've been campaigning, as you know, since we met, against things like Grexit, even though I am one of the most severe critics of the European Union. But, you know, it's like your family. Okay, they suck. You criticize the shit out of them. But you don't ask for their dissolution. or turn against them.
You can't.
Okay. So, okay, the family is too close for comfort as an analogy. But your own state.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent all my life demonstrating against Greek governments. It's not because I'm not a patriot. It's because I'm a patriot that I demonstrate against Greek governments. Similarly, I'm a Europeanist, which means I need to struggle against those who control the European Union institutions and make such a mess of it.
One of the central pillars in your analysis is the role of central banks in pushing the money profit as a signal disappears because the money is coming for free, essentially. So therefore, the central bankers, kind of God forbid, are an essential element to where we go next.
Yes, they are. They've been an essential element to where we have been along the path that we've been following over the years. Let's face it, if it wasn't for Mario Draghi printing all this money, there would be no euro now.
That's true.
It wasn't done to our governments. Our governments were just observers. So they funded these zombies, the techno-feudal lords. The whole edifice is founded on this central bank money, which now has to be reduced in size in order to arrest the increasing inflation, which was caused by the supply chain disruption. And then turbocharged by the war in Ukraine. Now, there's, to put it in mathematical terms, if I'm allowed, there exists no number that the interest rate could be equal to such that inflation is tamed without destroying this whole edifice. Okay. This is an impossibility theorem.
So this is a cul-de-sac we're in.
So it's not a question of that there is the right interest rate, it's a question of finding it. There is no such thing as the right interest rate. Every interest rate is wrong. Either it's too much or too little, simultaneously. This is my analysis. So the crisis that started with Liz Truss was going to start somewhere in the system. The reason why it became so big, you know that.
Over there.
In
the UK. Yeah, over there.
Almost over here.
No, Next door. Giannis,
I come from Athens.
You were fucking cruising until you mentioned that. I was almost down on one knee. You were cruising. You're fucked now.
I fucked up. So, the reason why it was so big was because already the bond market in the United States was in turmoil.
Okay.
Already the US Treasury market was spiking up, volatility had hit record levels. And the Fed, as well as the IMF, were very worried about what was going on in the United States. It was at that moment when Liz Truss, in her infinite wisdom, decided to... Well, you see, what happened was this, to take it a bit further back. Before Boris Johnson was jettisoned...
Another genius.
Before he was jettisoned, Sunak was his chancellor, remember?
Yeah.
And Sunak wanted to slap down austerity onto the British economy because he could see that there was an inflationary bout coming. Johnson, being politically astute, far more so than any of the other idiots, said, no austerity. This is an austerity-averse nation. After George Osborne, we will lose elections. I will lose the Red Wall and so on. He was right about that. And Sunak was constrained and restrained, but then Partygate got rid of Johnson, and Sunak was riding high within the parliamentary Conservative Party. The only way Liz Truss could beat Rishi Sunak was to appeal to the basest instincts of the most inane Conservatives, the rank and file, right? And the rank and file of the Conservative Party have never seen a war they didn't like, or a tax cut to the rich that they disliked. So she appealed to them by saying, tax cuts, you know, the old Thatcherite thing, but forgetting that Thatcher first slapped down austerity and then redistributed wealth from the impoverished to the rich.
Yeah. Okay.
So she got the cart before the horses, Liz Truss, but she had to do it to beat Rishi Sunak. So the price for beating Rishi Sunak was that she created a financial crisis that would beat her. That's my understanding.
That's exactly, yeah.
And Rishi Sunak is back, more austere than ever.
Yeah.
Okay?
The most austere.
And he's going to damage Britain in the most spectacular way.
I think you're right.
By doing the exact opposite error of what Liz Truss was doing. No, so she went into excessive largesse to the rich, and she's now going into excessive austerity. So, you know, they have this amazing capacity always to err hugely, but simply to disagree with one another on whether to fuck up this way or that way.
Before we go, Yanis, okay, yeah. Let's just try and put some conclusions. So we have techno-feudalism, which I find a fascinating idea, and it kind of, I think a lot of us are trying to get our heads around it and trying to find the language, but also the framework to try and make some sense of this world that we're in. You have the atrophy of old pillars, okay, national pillars, etc. Okay, then you have these various, as you'd say, rather untalented or less than talented punters at the top. When you look out from Greece, when you're thinking about the world, you know, if you were to see 4 or 5 years hence, is it good or bad?
Oh, I'm not going to answer that. You know why? It's an ideological rejection of the question. Because, look...
I love the left.
Of course.
It was just a good or bad fucking question.
No. But let me explain why. And why is it an ideological denial of service?
Okay.
Because if you were to put a gun at my head and said, predict...
No, I don't mean predict. No,
well, that's what you said. You know, what do you think is going to happen in 5 years' time?
Good
that's
or bad?
Predict. Okay? I'm refusing to predict because my prediction will be so gloomy, everybody's going to leave here, including myself, in a suicidal state. Right? But...
So let's leave it later.
But there is good news. There is good news. That we should not indulge in predictions. And let me explain that. If you are a meteorologist, your job is to predict. That's what your job is, to predict the bloody weather, right? Because the weather doesn't give a damn about your predictions about the weather. So you are a good scientist if your predictions are accurate. And you're a bad scientist if you're, you know, you remember Michael Fish?
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Don't worry, it's not coming. It's only a bit of wind.
Okay. But when it comes to predicting social phenomena, economic phenomena, you are predicting what? What we are going to do. But given that our predictions feed into our emotions and therefore into our actions, okay, this is an infinite regress. So we have a duty not to predict and do that which is right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Yanis Varoufakis!
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.